Around 10 p.m. on August 20th, 1989, 21-year-old Lyle and 18-year-old Eric killed their parents, Jose and Kitty Menendez, in the den of their Beverly Hills mansion. They used shotguns they had purchased 2 days before, using the driver's license of Lyle's friend Donovan Gaudreau. Despite neighbors hearing the blast, they did not call the police immediately, and Lyle would eventually call the police at 11:47 p.m.
What's the problem?
Someone killed my parents.
Pardon me?
When the police arrived, the brothers were in hysterics, particularly Eric. The brothers told police that they had been at the movies and then had planned to meet a friend named Perry Berman. They had missed Perry and were going to meet him at a restaurant, but Eric needed false identification to drink, so they returned to the house where they discovered their parents. After some prodding by the police officer, Lyle speculated that his father's business connections could have led to the shooting. The police believed the brothers were traumatized from finding their parents and did not pursue them as suspects initially.
In the first week after the parents' deaths, Lyle and Eric went to a shopping mall and, with permission of relatives who managed the parents' estate, purchased 3 Rolex watches and 2 gold money clips. About 10 days after the parents' deaths, Lyle hired an emergency computer technician to wipe his mother's computer, which contained a basically empty file called Will.
As weeks went by and police had no leads, Eric's behavior became increasingly erratic. On October 31st, concerned he might kill himself, Eric went to his psychologist, Dr. Ozeal, and confessed.
Eric had told me that he wanted to take a walk. I wasn't sure exactly what the reason was, but he said he wanted to take a walk and tell me something that was they didn't want to tell me inside the office. And at some point in the session, as we were sitting in the park, we just discussed going back to the office, and we headed back to the office, and right before we entered the front door of the office building in which I had my office, he leaned back against, as I recall, a parking meter that was in front of the office door and said, we did it.
Ozeal called Lyle into the session, and when Lyle arrived, he expressed anger at Eric for having gone to Ozeal instead of to him. Eric bolted out of the office, and Lyle followed him out. According to Dr. Ozeal, as Lyle was leaving the office, he shook his hand and said, "Good luck, Dr. Ozeal," which Ozeal perceived as a threat on his life. Later that evening, Ozeal told his mistress, Judalon Smith, the details that Eric had relayed to him in the session.
The brothers went back to Dr. Ozeal's office 2 days later. In this session, Ozeal claims the brothers told him that they had killed their father because he was controlling, and that they killed their mother because she was a witness, because she was suicidal, and because she would not have been able to live without their father. The brothers claim that Ozeal suggested those motives for killing their parents, and they went along with it because they did not want to reveal the real reason why. Ozeal documented both sessions in notes that he dictated around 1 week after the sessions took place.
The brothers saw Ozeal one more time on December 11th. Ozeal recorded a portion of this session, where both brothers and Ozeal can be heard discussing the killing of the parents and the previously mentioned motives for around an hour.
4 months later, on March 8th, 1990, Judalon Smith went to the police asking them to file charges against Dr. Ozeal for raping her. She told them that Ozeal had a taped, recorded confession of the Menendez brothers and recalled some of the details that Ozeal had told her about the brothers' involvement. A search warrant for the tapes was served on Ozeal's home, and Lyle was arrested the following day. Eric, who was playing in a tennis tournament in Israel, returned immediately and was arrested.
This began 3 years of legal battles over the admissibility of Dr. Ozeal's tapes, which went all the way up to the California Supreme Court. In the end, it was ruled that Dr. Ozeal's voice-recorded notes could be used in the brothers' trial because he had felt threatened by Lyle, which voided doctor-patient confidentiality. However, the Supreme Court ruled that the recorded session from December 11th could not be used because Ozeal was no longer threatened at that time.
While the tapes were being litigated, the brothers' lawyers were struggling to get any information out of them. Finally, in the summer of 1990, Eric, who had been hallucinating his father's voice in his cell, revealed that his father had molested him for 12 years, right up until the killings. Shortly after this, the brothers admitted to their family members and girlfriends that they had killed their parents, and told them of Jose's sexual abuse of Eric. The defense then began to piece together the story of the Menendez family that had ended in violence on August 20th, 1989.
The Menendez brothers' first trial began in 1993, with Judge Stanley Weisberg presiding and a single camera in the courtroom capturing the trial. The prosecution argued that the brothers had planned the killings of their parents with a motive of hatred and greed. And the defense argued that the killing had not been planned and had been fueled by years of psychological, physical, and sexual abuse.
The first controversial moment in the trial came when Lyle's friend Donovan testified that he did not recall a conversation in the spring of 1989 where Lyle revealed to him that he and Eric had been molested by their father. That night, a reporter named Robert Rand went onto a local TV station and played a section of an interview he had done with Donovan where he recounted that Lyle had, in fact, told him that.
It appears that he has perjured himself.
Goudreau had testified he never heard Lyle Menendez say he was sexually abused by his father, Jose Menendez. But Rand had a taped interview in which Goudreau said Lyle had in fact told of sexual abuse.
He told me about his father.
Basically, he said that his father had been abusing Eric.
Yeah, him and Eric. And
Lyle also.
Yeah.
The defense used this in the next day to catch Donovan in a lie, and the entire taped interview of Donovan recalling this conversation to Robert Rand was eventually brought into this trial as a piece of evidence.
The prosecution's key witness was Dr. Ozeal, who recounted the events of Eric's confession to the juries. Dr. Ozeal's credibility was ripped to shreds on cross-examination by Leslie Abramson, who questioned his billing practices, his decision to reveal the contents of his therapy sessions to Judilon Smith, and the nature of his romantic relationship with Judilon.
Did you think she was a stable person?
At that time?
Yeah.
Not very.
So you went to the home of this not very stable person, and you told her that the Menendez brothers had killed their parents and had threatened to kill you, and you were in danger, and she was too. Is that right?
I don't think I said those words that way, but I did reveal some of that content. That's correct. I disclosed that as a warning.
To an unstable person?
To someone who at that time was not very stable.
Leslie also called into question the validity of many of the statements Dr. Ozeal accredited to Lyle and Eric during those sessions.
There is no issue as to who killed Jose and Mary Louise Menendez. Why they were killed is what the focus of all of our evidence will be on.
The defense began their section of the trial by presenting a myriad of witnesses who observed physically and verbally abusive incidents throughout Lyle and Eric's childhood, including relatives, friends of the family, teachers, and tennis and other sports coaches. The witnesses described the Menendez family as a family which valued public image to the extreme, with a violent and aggressive father, and a mother who was unpredictable and depressed. They also describe seeing the effects of this home life on both Lyle and Eric through their school and sports behavior and performance.
Were the boys ever disciplined with a belt?
Yes. Kitty at that time would turn the TV up. You could hear the ptsh, ptsh. You can hear the belt.
And would you see bruises on the boys after that?
Yes, and they're above their thigh area for where a belt would be hit. When the ritual, when he came home, he would sit in his chair and have his paper, and Kitty would then come in and fill him with the day's events, or prior to that would have called him on the phone to prepare him for when he got home. He would take his belt off and lay it on the couch, or at times he would, when you take a belt and you snap it to get your attention, and would lay it on the coffee table.
And did that have any particular significance or meaning to
you? Someone was going to be disciplined.
And what about Kitty? Did she have a temper?
Oh, immensely, immensely. If I may, I could show you her parents that let me know she was about to fly off the handle. Is that she would?
Can you stand up and demonstrate?
She would be standing in an area, spacing on an area, and thinking about what. And all of a sudden, she would just turn her fist up and.
So you'd clench.
And she would squint. Her teeth, her lips would go straight. She had perfect teeth, so you can see her teeth would just come out. the veins in her neck would pop and her fists would be and then clenched where her knuckles would be white from clenching her fists. And at first I didn't know what to accept of that, and then as I lived there I realized what that was, what that appearance of her was about to happen with, what was about to happen.
What was about to happen?
On numerous occasions, and this happened every week, she would, in the kitchen, would open a cupboard and start taking coffee cups, coffee saucers, breakfast bowls, these are glass items, and repeatedly throwing them in the sink. It would get my attention immediately. I would run in the kitchen and go, "Kitty!" Which would snap her out of whatever she was into.
Did you love your mom and dad?
Yes.
And on August 20th, 1989, did you and your brother kill your mother and father?
Yes.
Did you kill them for money?
Is that
no?
Answer?
No.
Did you kill them because you wanted to pay them back for the way they had treated you?
Excuse me, I reject that if you're waiting.
Overall. No.
Why did you kill your parents?
Because we were afraid.
Lyle was the first of the brothers to take the stand. In his first day of testimony, he emotionally recalled being molested by his father from ages 6 to 8, as well as apologized to his brother for having repeated the same acts on Eric.
So during the time between 6 and 8, when this was going on, did you tell your brother?
No.
Did you do something to your brother?
Yes.
What did you do to your brother?
I took him out to the woods whenever I felt, I don't know, I took him out sometimes, and I took a toothbrush also, and I played with Eric in the same way. And I'm sorry.
Further days of testimony by Lyle included details of the physical and verbal abuse suffered by the brothers throughout their childhood from both parents. Lyle testified that Kitty had expressed her hatred of him since day one and had also molested him from ages 11 to 13. When Eric took the stand following Lyle, he elaborated on the family dynamics and abuse, as well as described a pattern of sexual abuse from his father that began at the age of 6 and continued all the way to age 18.
In addition to the testimony about the lifetime of abuse, both brothers described a series of events that culminated in the brothers killing their parents.
Did you have some hope or dream or expectation over that summer of 1989 for some improvement in your life?
I had it for a lot longer than that.
But you had it that summer as well?
Yes.
And first of all, what was it that you wanted to improve in your life?
I wanted to end the sex with my dad.
And did you have some expectation of how that was going to happen?
Yes.
And what did you expect?
I was going to go to college.
And how was that going to end the sex with your dad?
I was going to get away from him. And I wasn't going to sleep at the house anymore.
1 week before the killings, Jose shattered Eric's dream by telling him that he was going to be sleeping at home 4 nights a week throughout college, which Eric knew meant the sexual abuse would continue. 2 days later, Eric witnessed Kitty rip Lyle's hairpiece off during an argument, which prompted Eric to tell Lyle that their father was still molesting him.
I was feeling really, really depressed and really down, and I didn't know what to do at the time. So I figured I'd tell Lyle and maybe he could help me. I told him that things between Dad and I were still happening, and that he kept asking what I was talking about.
So did you tell him what you were talking about?
Finally, I told him. I told him that they were just sexual things.
Sexual things?
Yes.
When Jose came home from a business trip 2 days after Eric revealed his secret to Lyle, Lyle confronted his father. Jose said that what he did with Eric was none of Lyle's business, indicating he would continue to molest Eric, and Lyle threatened to expose him publicly.
I swore and told him he was a fucking sick person, and I told him no, and that he wasn't going to touch my brother again, and I threatened him.
How did you threaten him?
I told him that I would tell everybody everybody everything about him, that I would tell the police, and that I would tell the family. And after I threatened him, his demeanor changed pretty drastically.
How did it change?
He sort of relaxed, he sat back, and he just sort of looked at me. He said, "We all make choices in life, son. Eric made his, and you've made yours." I thought, oh my God, he thinks I'm gonna tell people, regardless. I got up and said, "Dad, you know, I'm only gonna tell people if you don't stop touching Eric, if it doesn't stop." And he just looked at me and said, "You're gonna tell everyone anyway." And he left. And I sat back down, thinking that it was a disaster.
Later that night, Kitty revealed to Eric that she had always known of Jose's abuse.
She said something like, oh, I understand a lot more than you think.
What did you say when you heard? Well, first of all, what did you think when you heard that?
I thought that she was saying that she knew what was happening between Dad and I, but I couldn't. I thought I had it wrong. And so I said, what do you mean? What do you mean you understand? What do you understand? And I couldn't understand.
And what did she say?
Well, she said, oh, I know. I've always known. You think I'm stupid?
The brothers became convinced that their parents were going to kill them to protect their image, so they purchased shotguns and ammunition the next day to protect themselves.
Over the next few days, comments and actions by both parents, combined with a history of abuse and threats, accelerated the brothers' fear that their parents were plotting to kill them.
She told me that if I would have kept my mouth shut, things might have worked out in the family.
What did you think that meant?
That meant that things had not worked out in the family, and I believed that she was going to kill us.
The night of August 20th, the brothers had wanted to go out to meet with their friend Perry Berman, but their parents would not allow them to leave the house. This led the hypervigilant and already fearful brothers to believe that their parents were getting ready to kill them that night.
And I just freaked out.
What did you think they were doing in the den? What did you think was going to happen?
I thought they were going ahead with their plan to kill us.
This sent the brothers into a panicked state, and they retrieved their guns and burst into the room firing.
Do you remember firing a very close shot at your father?
I believe so.
At what part of his body?
From the side. Behind, kind of. I ended up there. I don't remember the shot, really. But I remember the picture.
The picture you saw here? Are you talking about your dad's head wound?
Yes.
And do you think you did that?
Yes.
At some point, was your gun empty?
Yes.
And was there something about your mother that you learned then, either through Eric or you saw something or heard something?
Could see sort of behind my dad, really, barely. But could see somebody moving, seemed like moving in the direction of where my brother should be. And so I reloaded.
You reloaded? Is that yes?
Yes.
And what did you do after you reloaded?
Thank you. I ran around and shot my mom.
Where did you shoot her?
I just reached over and I shot her close.
By this series of events, the crime was manslaughter, more specifically, imperfect self-defense. Imperfect self-defense is a killing that is done with an unreasonable but honest belief that the person needs to protect themselves from an impending attack.
After the testimony of the brothers, the defense brought in a variety of world-renowned child psychologists who had evaluated the brothers over 50 hours of therapeutic sessions, as well as conducted interviews with many other witnesses.
Dr. Burgess, did you, after examining all the information that you've testified to, and you examined all the records, the school records, the medical records, all of that, did you not?
Yes, I did.
And after your 50 hours of the interview with Eric Menendez, did you formulate an opinion as to whether or not he was a person who was sexually molested as a child and adolescent?
Yes, I did.
And what is that opinion?
And my opinion was that he was.
They each concluded that the brothers were telling the truth about the abuse and the events of the last week, and explained their reasons for drawing that conclusion. They also explained how the brothers' history of abuse had led Lyle and Eric to interpret their parents' actions to mean that they were going to kill them that night.
Following the testimony of the psychologists, Judge Weisberg went over the ruling of the California Supreme Court and allowed the tape from the brothers' session with Dr. Azeel on December 11th to be played as a piece of evidence. The defense brought the expert therapist back to explain how the brothers dropped many hints in the tape that they are not telling the truth about the motive for killing their parents.
And what is the clue on line 21?
It's where Lyle Menendez says, "I couldn't let him get away with this."
Can you understand from the context what it is that Lyle Menendez is talking about? Getting away with what?
Right. You don't know. This doesn't have any reference.
Well, isn't it following a discussion about what the father is doing to the mother?
Yes, that's true.
But is the problem with that that that's old news?
That's old news, yes.
How old?
1987.
And is it something as a therapist, if someone told you that he killed someone because he couldn't let him get away with this, and the this is 2.5 years ago, is that a clue you'd want to follow up?
Yes, definitely.
Could it mean another this? I couldn't let him get away with something else he was doing.
Yes.
Homophobia and sexism influenced many jurors' perceptions of the sexual abuse, and the first trial ended in hung juries for both brothers. The first trial was one of a string of high-profile losses for the LA District Attorney's Office in the 1990s. District Attorney Gil Garcetti and Judge Weisberg were both up for re-election and faced immense public pressure to convict the Menendez brothers, especially after the OJ acquittal in 1995.
In the second trial, in 1995, a few key changes were made. Lyle chose not to testify, which meant that many of the witnesses that could corroborate his side of the story were blocked. Dr. Azeel also did not testify. But the December 11th confession tape was played first without any expert therapist testimony. Additionally, Judge Weisberg blocked nearly all the corroborating abuse witnesses and expert psychologists. He then refused to instruct on imperfect self-defense and blocked the possibility of manslaughter for the killing of Kitty, saying there was only evidence of a heat of passion manslaughter killing for Jose. These rulings by Judge Weisberg essentially invalidated the defense argument and led to the brothers' convictions of first-degree murder.
You may find Eric and Lyle Menendez to be cunning and manipulative, as their second jury seems to have, pronouncing them guilty of first-degree murder. Or, like many of the jurors at their first trial, you may decide that they are credible and that their story strikes a sympathetic chord. That is perhaps for you to determine. My job was to ask the questions, beginning with this one. What went through your minds when you heard that verdict? First degree murder, guilty.
That I was going to spend the rest of my life in prison, without any possibility of ever getting released. And you're devastated. I was devastated.
The brothers were separated and sent to separate prisons for 22 years, but in 2018, they were reunited at the facility they are currently in.